Chapter 66. Hammers are very evolved items. They haven't changed for years. Why would they change? Nails haven't changed. Nails have been the same forever. Therefore, a hammer's necessary features were worked out long ago. A heavy metal head and a handle. All you need and nothing you don't. Fraser's was a claw design. A framing hammer, maybe 28 ounces. A big, ugly thing. Total overkill for picture hanging. But such mismatches of tool and purpose are common in the real world. It made for a decent weapon, though. He came at me with it cocked in his right hand like a nightstick. I scrambled up out of my chair pretty fast. Any idea of embarrassing him with an inappropriate post-mortem position abandoned long ago. Sheer instinct. I don't scare easy, but humans are very evolved, too. A lot of what we do is hardwired right back to the mists of time, right back to where my pal Stan Lowry liked to start a story. Fraser's office was small. Its free floor space was smaller still, like fighting in a phone booth. How it was going to go would depend on how smart Fraser was, and I figured he was plenty smart. He had survived Vietnam and the Gulf and years of Pentagon bullshit. You don't do any of that without brains. I figured he was an easy 7 out of 10, maybe an 8. In no imminent danger of winning the Nobel Prize, but definitely smarter than the average bear. Which helped me. Fighting morons is harder. You can't guess what they're going to do. But smart people are predictable. He swung the hammer right to left, waist height, a standard opening gambit. I arched back, and it missed me. I figured next he would slash back the other way, left to right, same height. And he did, and I arched back again, and he missed again. An exploratory exchange, like moving pawns on a chessboard. He was breathing strangely. Ferocity, not a throat problem. Nothing for St. Audrey to worry about. It was ferocity and excitement. He was a warrior at heart, and warriors love nothing more than the fight itself. It consumes them. They live for it. He was smiling, too, in a feral way, and his eyes were seeing nothing except the hammerhead and my midsection beyond it. There was a sharp tang of sweat in the air, something primitive, like a nighttime rodent's lair. I dodged forward half a step, and he matched it with a backward move of his own that left us in the middle of the floor, which was important to me. He wanted me back against the wall, and I didn't want to be there. Not yet, anyway. He swung the hammer a third time, scything it hard, making it look like he meant it, which he didn't. Not yet. I could read the pattern. It was in his eyes. I arched back, and the hammerhead buzzed by an inch from my coat. 28 ounces on a long handle. The momentum of the miss carried it way around. His shoulders turned 90 degrees, and he twisted at the waist. He used the torque to come right back at me. With some arm extension this time, he forced me back. I ended up close to the wall. I watched his eyes. Not yet. He was a warrior. I wasn't. I was a brawler. He lived for the tactical victory. I lived to piss on the other guy's grave. Not the same thing. Not the same thing at all. A different focus. He swung for the fourth time. Same angle, same height. He was like a fastball pitcher, getting me used to one thing before unleashing another thing entirely. Inside, 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 and then the splitter away. But Fraser wouldn't go low. He would go high. Low would be better. But he was only a 7 out of 10. Maybe an 8, but not a 9. He swung a fifth time. Same height, same angle, so hard that the tines of the claw made a raw thrumming sound as they moved through the air, stopping dead as the hammer stopped dead. He swung a sixth time. Same height, same sound, more extension. I was very close to the wall, no real place to go. Then came the seventh swing, same height, same angle, same sound. Then came his eyes. They flicked upward, and the eighth swing aimed high, right at the side of my head, right at my temple. I saw a glint off the hammer's inch-wide, striking face, 28 ounces, nearly 2 pounds in weight. It would have punched a very neat hole through the bone. But it didn't, because my head wasn't there when it arrived. I dropped vertically, 8 inches onto bent and preset knees, 4 inches so the swing would miss me and another 4 as a margin of safety. And I heard the rush of air above me, and I felt the mist drag him around in a wild, parked circle. And I started back up, and then we were into a whole new set of calculations. We had done the 3 dimensions. We had done in and out, back and forth, and up and down. Now we were ready for the 4th dimension, time. The only remaining questions were, how fast could I hit him, and how fast was he spinning? And they were crucial questions, for him especially. I was twisting as I rose, and my elbow was already moving fast, and it was a certainty I was going to hit him with it in the neck, a mathematical certainty. But which part of the neck? The answer was, whichever part was there when the blow landed. Front, side, back. It was all the same to me, but not to him. For him, some parts would be worse than others. The 28 ounces had first pulled his arms away from his shoulders in a kind of Olympic hammer-throwing way, and then they had pulled his trailing shoulder hard in a kind of whip-cracking way, so he was well into a serious but uncontrolled spin by then, and my elbow was doing pretty well by that point, a muscle memory thing. It happens automatically. If in doubt, throw the elbow. Maybe a childhood thing. My weight was behind it, my foot was braced, and it was going to land, and it was going to land hard. In fact, it was going to land very hard. It was already scything and clubbing downward, and it was accelerating. It was going to be a vicious blow. It was going to be the kind of vicious blow he might survive if he took it on the side of the neck, but not on the back. A blow like that on the back of the neck would be fatal, no question. Something to do with how the skull joins the vertebrae. So it was all about time and speed and rotation and eccentric orbits. It was impossible to predict too many moving parts. At first, I thought he was going to take it mostly on the side. On the angle, really, but with the ratio tilted toward maybe surviving it. Then I saw it was going to be closer to 50-50. But the 28 ounces suddenly pulled him off in some new direction, and from that point onward there was no doubt he was going to take it on the back of the neck and nowhere else. No doubt at all. The guy was going to die. Which I didn't regret, except in a practical sense.